Robert, and with me again today is Bill Lawson. Welcome, Bill.
It's good to be back, Marty. It's been a while.
That's right. And we started on the testimony of Robert Morrison, who lived during that 19th century of the great gospel missions. And, of course, we saw last time a couple of the factors that these ones who went forth during that century were influenced by the Moravians and by brothers like David Brainerd and William Carey. And, of course, we saw how the sovereign Lord of all was over all the environment, politically, economically, in so many different ways. But the Lord still needed some vessels, some brothers and sisters to cooperate with him. And Robert Morrison, of course, was one in particular that we're talking about. And last time we saw that he was saved at the age of 16. And right away he had a hunger for the Bible and for spiritual books. And he began to pursue, even with some companions. And by the age of 19, he was called by the Lord. He really had the burden and prayer even to prepare himself that he could go forth. And he had a burden right away to go forth to China. And we know that eventually there was a saying at that time. They said, China should be for Christ and in this generation. So they were aggressive and they were burdened and they didn't want to delay, but they wanted to take the gospel forth to this great land of China. Of course, some went to other places like to India and Africa. Mm-hmm. But Robert Morrison here, he went forth to China. And initially he wanted others to go with him, but we saw last time he ended up going out alone. And of course, this time we're continuing his testimony. And we see that Robert Morrison, when he responded to the High Commission to go forth, he shipped out in in early 1807, and it took him about 8 months to cross the sea, and he had to stop in the U.S. on the way. But eventually he arrived in a place called Macau on the coast of China, which was about 90 miles from Canton. So the Lord preserved him during his trip over the turbulent sea. And he began, even on his trip, to cast all his burdens upon the Lord. And the Lord brought him through. And actually, Bill, I was thinking when preparing for this, it reminded me of a very famous hymn of the 19th century. There was a sister who wrote this hymn called Publish Glad Tidings, Tidings of Peace, Tidings of Jesus, Redemption and Release. Well, that wasn't just a good hymn, but that was really the burden and commission that many believers felt at that time. But they were also very practical. They knew that in order for this to happen, some had to go forth to bear the message, and some had to give of their wealth to, like the song says, to speed them on their way.
And yeah, right.
Of course, many others were in the background praying that on their behalf that the Lord would be with them and bless their work. So anyway, today we see this brother, Robert Morrison, who really responded to the Lord's commission.
He was really quite a pioneer, Marty, as you say, born in 1782, died in 1834. And history tells us he was the very first Protestant missionary to work in China, and not an easy task.
Right.
You're talking, we're talking here as believers about a tall task to go by himself, to work in that foreign land back in 1807. That's not a small thing.
Right.
He served there in China. He remained there even until his death in 1834. So he, as you say, arrived there in 1807. He spent 27 years there laboring. Apparently, he didn't accomplish that much spiritually, but really, he was kind of a seed sown there. Of course, when he arrived there, they couldn't get right into the mainland because of the Chinese prohibition. He had to stay on that island, Macau, that Portuguese colony at that time, off. That's right on the coast of China. And, of course, When he arrived there, he was welcomed by some Englishmen who belonged to the East India Company. You know, merchants have nothing to do with the gospel.
Right.
They were doing business in that vast land of China. And, of course, they informed him very, very quickly, like, the people in Europe, they have no clue, no idea of how difficult it is to live here, reside here, work here. Mm-hmm. So no doubt that was probably not such an encouraging word. But he was one that I think, from what history also tells us, that, you know, like you mentioned, Marty, that 8-month-long sea voyage just to get from London to China.
Right.
As a young man, you know, sailing over there, he was asked by someone, you know, obviously not very encouraging, said, do you really expect to make an impression on the idolatry of the great Chinese Empire? Mm-hmm. And Morrison replied, no, sir, but I expect God will.
Right. So
he really had quite an answer to that person that probably tried to discourage him.
Mm-hmm.
But Morrison realized that to do anything for the Lord there in China, he had to take that first big step of learning the language. And we all know when I went to Russia in 1991, that was the biggest challenge for me, is try to learn that difficult Russian language, or else we couldn't have any way with those Russian believers over there to communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Morrison had the same problem. He was told right away from the start, you know, that the Chinese, they were prohibited from teaching the language to foreigners. They were not allowed to teach Chinese to foreigners. And if they did, they were under the penalty of death.
Mm.
So he said, eventually he testified that his crime is wishing to learn the language.
Right.
And then instructors came to help him, right? And he was able to find a couple instructors to assist him. They were somewhat helpful, but on the other hand, their personality was not so good. So they were moody, illogical, and they had ill tempers. So, but eventually Morrison, you know, he bore with them. And then, you know, he had difficult days, Marty, from the very get-go.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know every day if he would be allowed to stay in the country. He was isolated from others. He found himself the victim of fraud and deceit from even the helpers. Obviously, his environment was very trying. He also soon became familiar with the superstition and idolatry of the Chinese people. Of course, his heart was quite grieved because he was not able at that time to preach the gospel because he didn't know the language enough. Right,
right. Right.
He said, I find much difficulty in speaking for God, for the Chinese have no proper idea even of one living, of the one and living and true God, and they have in no words to express such an idea.
So, yeah, you're right. Morrison faced difficulties from without to within, and, of course, even the place of his lodging and study was all he could find was an old warehouse.
Not like today's modern offices, right?
No, no. And the rent was high, and even he testified at one point, even the roof fell in where he was staying.
Wow, wow.
So it was a pretty poor living situation, and I'm sure there were many stresses and challenges facing him, especially in his trying to master the Chinese language. And all these things started to take a toll on his physical health and well-being right from the start. So no doubt he was also lonely and felt a lack, especially he was used to, back in England, Christian fellowship. So he was there on his own. Of course, there were these other English businessmen, but they were not the same. They were not participants of the Christian fellowship. But somewhat this was remedied when he met a sister over there in this family. Her last name was Morton. And Morrison eventually was led by the Lord to marry her. And he was the one. Actually, he led her to salvation. And through his help, she began to give herself to the Lord to serve with Robert there in China. So he was happy about that, and he began to have, of course, Christian fellowship with her. But at the same time, there were some pressures beginning to mount for him to leave China. But right at that time, it's really sovereign. The Lord opened up a position with this East India Company that Morrison would be their official translator. So apparently in just a couple years, he really advanced in his learning of the Chinese language, and the Lord was able to bless him with this employment. And it was more than just a job. It was no doubt it helped him to meet some of his needs and enabled, but mainly it enabled him to remain in the country. And that was a great thing at that time, to be able to stay there and continue his burden, continue his work. Also, he felt by taking this job, he no longer would be a burden to the missionary society that sent him out. So he continued on and used his time after his working as a translator for the East India Company. He began to prepare a Chinese vocabulary, and he made this Anglo-Chinese grammar and dictionary. But of course, his main burden was really the translation of the New Testament into the Chinese language, and that was what he really labored on while he was there in China.
That was not a small undertaking. And he caused also, eventually, he was the author of a 6-volume Chinese dictionary. So he really got into the language. As you say, can you imagine after a few years? I mean, Chinese is not an easy language. They don't even have an alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
So no doubt he must have had some kind of ability and talent to labor to be able to, in just 2 years, to advance to that point.
Right.
Of course, his sufferings, the hardship, they did not, they did not wane. They grew more and more.
Mm-hmm.
He physically, more headaches, illness set in. His wife became an invalid. Then they lost their first child at birth.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. Then his brother-in-law had some aspirations to work together with Morrison as a missionary to help.
You're right.
Then he became ill, and he had to leave the country,
right,
for a better environment and climate. And then at the same time, he was caught in the middle there. On one hand, if he would just stay and receive help from the mission board, he would be hurting financially. So he took that job at the same time at the East India Company. But if they found out, that he was doing something on the side in the matter of translation on the religious side, that he would be in trouble with them.
Right.
And then on the other side at the East India, the missionary side.
Right.
If they, they found out that he was supplementing his income from them, from the East India Company, and that had nothing to do with what they thought as a calling, his calling to be a missionary. So he was kind of like trapped in between.
Mm-hmm.
But his position, the Lord was sovereign there, and with the East India Company, a translator, enabled him to stay in China under that umbrella.
Right.
Of the East India Company. Then also, it also afforded him a way to stay away from the attacks of local troublemakers, jealous religious people, I think mainly the Roman Catholic workers.
Mm-hmm.
So he was still able, in a sovereign way, to devote the majority of his time to the work that, took him a whole lifetime to translate this book, the Bible, into the Chinese language.
Right.
He, one time he wrote home and talked about knowing that the labors of God, of God's servants in the gloom of the dungeon have illumined succeeding ages.
Mm-hmm.
So he was cheered.
Right.
He said, with the hope that his labors would be of some service to diffuse the divine truth among those millions in China. So, of course, he was desirous, too, to bear fruit, not just to do a Bible translation, neither a Chinese-English dictionary, but he wanted to preach the gospel and see some fruit, some Chinese brought to Christ. So he did begin to speak somewhat to his instructors and servants. And sometimes he would gather together a group of local Chinese, and it was funny, he did it in the locked room to proclaim the message of Christ.
Right.
But for a long time, he did not see any fruit born through his labor.
But he still had the longing, like you mentioned. He wanted to see some fruit of his labor. But in the meantime, he prepared these tracts on redemption and the way of salvation. And he produced a booklet on the Gospel of Luke. And while these were being prepared, at the same time the Chinese authorities issued an edict, and they prohibited any dissemination of religious teachings, especially those of Christianity. And they made it a capital crime to print any Christian books in Chinese. So Morrison was really very cautious. He said he could not stop his work, but it did make him more cautious. And he told, when he wrote back home, he said, "I must go forward trusting in the Lord." So he was willing, he said, to obey the governments as far as their decrees don't oppose what is required by the Almighty. But he felt right. Like this here was really contrary to the Lord's command to preach the gospel.
Right.
So anyway, these threats were not only by the governmental authorities, but like you mentioned, there's persecution that rose up. The Roman Catholic bishop became very jealous, and he condemned anyone who would even have a conversation with Morrison or who would receive any of his literature. So anyway, all these pressures were upon him, but he just kept working on diligently to complete his Anglo-Chinese dictionary and translate the Bible. Of course, he was able periodically to send portions back home, and one of the British and Foreign Bible Society decided that at that point, when they received, I think it was the Book of Acts, that they would eventually they would donate money for the printing of the whole Bible when it was ready. So that was an encouragement to Morrison. But I think one of the biggest encouragements, Bill, was when eventually the Missionary Society sent out another brother named William Milne.
And right. He came, that really changed the situation. Right?
It did. It did. He came to assist Morrison. Him and his wife came together, and this was a real encouragement to Robert Morrison and his wife.
That was really a godsend, I think, Marty, that this, 6 years after Morrison began to labor in 1813, this brother Milne and his wife arrived to assist, Morrison in all of his endeavors. Later, Will Milne, right, was saved at a young age. He testified that he said, "Surely the Lord magnified his grace to me above any of the fallen race." He was quite touched in salvation.
Right.
And then, of course, he was in a very sweet fellowship with the Lord and in his word. And then he spent many hours in prayer, not thanking the Lord that he was converted, but that others would be converted. Mm-hmm. So at age of 20, he consecrated himself to do mission work. But because of needs in the family, it took him 5 years before he could get over to China. The Missionary Society eventually asked him if he would be willing to go to the mission field as not just to do mission work, but as a servant to a missionary. Of course,
right.
That missionary was Robert Morrison. And Milne, in a humble way, he just said, "Yes, sir, most certainly I'm willing to be anything so that I am in the work."
Right.
Whether he would be a hewer of wood or to draw water or even to do those menial tasks, he was willing to do that. So Morrison received him in Macau and said and offered this prayer for his new fellow laborer, that the Lord's servant may be spared in health, soon acquire the language of the heathen, and be a faithful missionary of Jesus Christ. But, as always, the excitement didn't last long. The main opponents, right, of the brothers there, right, the two of them, the two couples, were the religious people. The Roman Catholics, they were upset. They rose up. They appealed to the Chinese authorities to deport the new family.
Right.
Amazing. Then the issue was forced. Morrison appealed to the authorities. The governor rejected the appeal. And then that couple, the Milnes, they were only allowed to stay 18 days, Marty.
Right, right.
Imagine. So, and then Robert Morrison became more, in a sense, depressed. And he was thinking of just give up the whole mission and just work full time for the East India Company. But Morrison's opposers, they didn't realize he was first a missionary,
right.
Not an employee of East India Company. So he was first a missionary.
He really had the burden to continue regardless of the environment and regardless of the Milnes being able to stay or not. Of course, the Milnes, they eventually moved on to Canton. And, of course, Morrison was continually denounced and persecuted by the Catholics. And there was more and more pressure on him to leave. And they put fear in all his assistants who ended up fleeing. But by this point, it was too late. You know, the New Testament had already been translated and printed, and it was ready for circulation. So at this point, both Milne and Morrison, they had to leave Canton. So Milne, he began to travel around the Chinese settlements in the islands of Southeast Asia. And basically, what they were doing was looking for another place where they could work more peacefully. And while he was going, Milne distributed all these newly produced New Testaments and thousands of tracts he just distributed along the way.
Right.
At the same time, Morrison, he just kept continuing on laboring. He was so productive. He published a selection of hymns. He wrote an outline of the Old Testament history. He translated the book of Genesis, and he kept working on his dictionary. So he was quite the worker. But eventually, when the Milnes returned, they had fellowship together, and they did find a place in Southeast Asia, actually part of Malaysia, called Malacca, mm-hmm. where they set up a new base. And this base was going to be for training of others, for printing books, and would really give them a place that would have access to where many other Chinese live. So this was a beginning. This was really the pioneering days in China.
Really so, Marty. So, of course, after a number of years in 1814, that's like 7 years of labor, of sowing the seed, finally he got one convert, right, a first fruit of his labor.
Mm-hmm.
One of those original Chinese tutors that he worked with called upon the Lord, right?
Right.
His sins were remitted. He received the Lord. When Morrison first came to China, he had shared with this particular one concerning Christ, but of course the Chinese tutor could not understand Morrison's words, obviously. And then, of course, Morrison, learning the Chinese, working with it, not only the written side, but on the spoken side, he improved, and the Lord eventually opened the heart of this teacher. Now
right.
He could understand, the message, the words that Morrison testified. So he began to see that the merits of Jesus were able, right, to save all men in all ages and nations.
Right.
And he listened to Morrison and believed in the Lord, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous.
So eventually this one was baptized, and maybe we'll conclude here today, Bill, with Morrison's prayer when he baptized this one. I thought it was very touching. He said, "May he be the first fruit of a great harvest, one of millions who shall come and be saved." So I don't know if Morrison realized, but his prayer has surely been heard and has been answered in the last couple hundred years.
Really
so. This one that was baptized was really the first of millions who have believed in the Lord since that time. And anyway, we appreciate Robert Morrison's testimony. He was a real pioneer. He suffered. He really paid a price. So maybe we can learn of these brothers. They're real patterns who have gone before us. Well, I think we'll stop here for today, Bill, and I appreciate the time. And maybe next time we'll have one more session on Robert Morrison. So thank you.
Very good.
Okay.